And away we go. We're back here, WWGH Radio, Tuesday, February 25th, 2020, 14 minutes past the hour. And we're having a good time here this morning. Do want to remind you that coming up on Friday, we do have a big announcement coming, something that's going to happen on Friday. Now, we're just about to put the finalization on this. And it should be finalized by tomorrow, I would think. It really should be finalized by today, and I will make the announcement about this particular event tomorrow. But we have one loose end, one puzzle piece still to put together for the event on Friday, so I can't talk about it yet, except to tell you we think we have a big event going on Friday, and we'll make the announcement tomorrow morning here on this station, so stay tuned for that. Now, last hour, we made the announcement that this Thursday, February the 27th, Stewart's Drive-In Root Beer Stand, a Marian tradition, located at 1036 North Main Street, will be opening for its 95th season. How about that? 95 years. And we are going to celebrate with Stewart's on Thursday. Now, here's how we're going to do that. Thursday morning, during this show from 8:10 until 10 a.m., we are going to be giving away a root beer float to Stewart's Root Beer. Now, I think we're going to do this by doing a drawing. So we'll take entries in for the 2-hour period, and then we'll make a drawing at 10 o'clock right before I'm about to go off the air on Thursday morning. Now, if you don't win in that drawing, Charlie Evers will be doing the same thing on Thursday. From 10 a.m. until 12 p.m., Charlie will be having a drawing for another free root beer float from Stewart's Root Beer on Thursday. So we will be giving away two free root beer floats on Thursday morning. Now, here's the thing. Because you only have until 1 o'clock to pick up prizes here at the station, here's how we're going to do this. You do not have to come to the station here to pick up that particular prize. All you have to do is give us your name that morning, and we will send that over to the people at Stewart's. And you just have to go over there that day and give them your name, and you will get your free root beer float. So how about that? It's going to be the big Stewart's Root Beer Stand 95th season celebratory party on Thursday. Now, here's another twist in this whole Thursday event. Thursday night, we, WWGH Radio, will be doing a live remote from Stewart's. I don't know if this has ever been done before. We'll be doing a live remote celebrating 95 years of Stewart's Root Beer on Thursday night from 7:10 until 8 p.m. 7:10 till 8 p.m. will be on the air, broadcasting from Stewart's. Now, joining me that night at this point, I do know will be Sean Kraft, and I do know will be the 40th Treasurer of the United States, Mary Ellen Withrow. She will be over there with us. Now, at this point, we don't know how we're going to do this, because I've never been inside Stewart's, to be honest with you, but what I've heard this morning is it's a galley, and there are four stools in there. It is heated, but obviously the car hops are going in and out the doors, so it's going to be a little chilly. The weather Thursday, I guess, is going to be a little chilly. They're calling for some snow on Wednesday, I guess, is what I've understood. But it's going to be busy. It's opening day, 95 years. So if we cannot sit inside, I guess we will sit in the car and do the broadcast that way. But regardless, we will get on the air on Thursday from Stewart's, 7:10 until 8 p.m. So that's going to be fun because, you know, I'm interested to hear Mary Ellen's opinion on all this because she's been here for quite a while and grew up in this area. And, of course, we'll all be ordering food. So there's that. There's the food aspect to this whole thing where we will all have food. Now, interestingly enough, I know somebody else who's going to be there that night is my good friend, bestie, Abby Croman. And I know she's bringing her family, as I understand it, over to the root beer stand. Now, I don't know if they're going inside. I don't know where they'll be in this whole, like, mesh-up of things going on that night. But I'm sure at some point that night you will hear Abby's voice on the air, because that's kind of how she is. And I'm not sure how this will all take place because of the setup. I'm not sure if it will take place if we're inside, if we're standing outside, depending on the weather, if we're in the car. I'm not sure how this will all go down, but I would imagine that you will probably hear from Abby at some point that night before we go off the air, or maybe at the beginning of the broadcast. So I don't know. I have not talked to Abby about this at this point yet, but I do know she will be there. I did talk to her about that yesterday. And I don't know what she gets at Stewart's. I wonder what she orders. So far, we're under the impression that Sean is going to have the cheese fries and then some kind of a hamburger and either a root beer or a root beer float. I think I'm definitely going to go with the shredded chicken sandwich at this point and then something on the side. I don't know, fries, maybe onion rings. I do love onion rings. And then I think they have onion rings over at Stewart's. I don't know. See, I got to look at a menu. I'm going to have to look at a menu. I need a menu. That's what I'm going to have to do. Peruse the menu. I might be one of those menu perusers. And then we had a call in before we went to break about the stuffed mushrooms, which sound good. Was it stuffed mushrooms or... No, it wasn't stuffed mushrooms, was it? Deep fried mushrooms, I think was what it was. See how easy my brain goes? 10 minutes, I forget everything I said before we went to break. Well, if you have anything you want to say in regard to the grand opening of Stewart's and our broadcast, or just the historic nature of that business in general, 95 years it's been here, give me a call. We've got a little free time here. 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Give me a ring here at the station. We'd love to put you up on the air when we're getting a call right now. So that must mean there's something somebody wants to say. Go ahead, caller.
Hey, Scott, you got to try the curly fries.
So the curly fries are where it's at.
Oh, God, they're good.
So I want to have the shredded chicken sandwich and just plain curly fries without cheese.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're great as far as that goes. And, you know, you're going to do a live remote on Thursday night, are you?
Thursday night, we're going to be over there 7:10 to 8 o'clock. It's going to be Sean, and at this point, Mary Ellen Withrow will be with us. And we're going to have a good time over. Are you going over on Thursday night?
Yeah, I'm going to try to make it. It sounds like it'll be interesting.
Oh, it's going to be a party. We're going to celebrate the 95th anniversary of this.
Well, we'll sure try to be there then.
Well, I hope you come over. And if you come over, say hello, and we can chat a little bit on the air about what you're having. And you can tell us how the food is.
Absolutely.
Hey, thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye. Well, there you go. See, this is going to be the place to be now. Thursday night, we're setting it up. This is going to be, they'll need reinforcements over there at Stewart's, the root beer stand on North Main. On Thursday, 7 to 10, we'll be there. Go ahead, caller. Go ahead.
Yeah. Hey, Scott, you want to try the in-season, the... strawberry pie.
Oh, you know, I've heard about this strawberry pie from the owner, Michelle. Now, what is so good about this strawberry pie?
I don't know. I don't think I've ever had a bad one over there because they usually have big, plump, nice red ones and juicy and everything's just good.
Now, what kind of mushroom did you say you typically have when you're there?
Oh, the deep fried.
It's a deep fried mushroom.
Uh-huh.
Now, is that a meal all into itself, or is that more of a side?
They'll put probably 8, maybe 10 in a little basket-like, but it's pretty good.
Doesn't really sound bad. Why? Are you going to be making it over to Stewart's on Thursday for the big grand opening?
Actually, that's my birthday, and my son's taking me out.
Oh, well, that's fun. Well, happy...
But I know your birthday was yesterday, right?
My birthday was yesterday, that's right.
You can't beat those Pisces.
No, that's right. Pisces are a good thing to be. Well, happy early birthday, and hopefully you'll make it over to Stewart's sometime this weekend.
Okay.
Hey, thanks for calling. Bye-bye. And again, remember, Stewart's Root Beer, a Marion tradition, 95th season, opens this coming Thursday, and we will be giving away root beer floats that morning on the air, 8, 10 to 10 a.m. on this show. We'll give away a root beer float, and then Charlie Evers will be giving away one during his show, 10 a.m. until 12 p.m. That's all on Thursday, the big opening day, February 27th, and then that night, we will be broadcasting live from Stewart's from 7:10 until 8 p.m. live over the air. I'll be there, Sean Kraft will be there, and 40th Treasurer of the United States, Mary Ellen Withrow, will be with us all over at Stewart's on Thursday night, 7:10 until 8 p.m., and the hours at Stewart's that day are 11 a.m. until 8 p.m. And don't forget that if you do win the root beer floats that morning, you don't have to come here and pick up any ticket or prize. We're going to send the names over there. So all you got to do is go to Stewart's that day and tell them you want a root beer float, and they'll have your name behind the counter. And that is that. Now, joining us, well, we're going to take this call real quick, and then we're going to go to our guest for the remainder of the program. Go ahead, caller.
Morning, Scott.
Good morning.
You need to get a foot-long coney with onions. And the deep-fried mushrooms with, I believe it's a tiger sauce, and a large root beer, and you'll be set.
Well, I'm torn between the shredded chicken and the foot-long coney, because I like both of those things.
Well, shredded chicken you can get kind of, you know, you make those at home yourself, but their coney sauce, their foot-longs, they're the best, absolutely.
I think you're exactly right. That is a tradition, and there's just something about Stewart's when it comes to chicken sandwiches and the footlong coney, in my opinion. I'm right with you on that one.
Okie doke.
Hey, are you going over on Thursday?
Probably not, but I'll hit it there for lunch later.
You'll hit it soon.
Yes, I will.
Hey, thanks for calling.
Uh-huh.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And now we are going to go to our guest this hour. We have not spoken to him, I think, since election night is the last time we had him in studio, where he won a fourth term in office, the mayor of Marion. Scott Scherzer joins us. We're always happy to have him in. Mayor, how are you?
Good morning. How are you today? I'm fine, thank you.
Doing great. You heading over to Stewart's this week?
Well, you know, listening to your show this morning and sitting here for a few minutes, I probably won't hit it this week. I am a warm weather Stewart's root beer stand kind of guy. I want it to be 50s, 60s, 70s, and even 80s or 90s. But yes, I will definitely hit Stewart's root beer stand. I have to agree with your last caller. I am a footlong coney person, but I would hold the onions on my footlong coney. But I agree with her on the footlong conies, and so Stewart's root beer stand, obviously an institution, and I heard you'll be spending some time there with my former boss, Mary Ellen Withrow.
Mary Ellen and I will be hanging out at Stewart's from 7 to 8 on Thursday night. And, you know, it's going to be interesting because, as you know, living here and going in Stewart's, there's only 4 stools inside. So to do this broadcast, it might end up that we'll be doing this in a car outside.
Well, that'll be interesting now, won't it?
Yeah, you'll have to listen to this. It could be historic.
The Stewart's Root Beer Stand is historic.
That's right.
So it only makes sense that your broadcast on opening day at Stewart's is historic as well.
We'll just tag right along
with
the whole thing. As I say, we have not had a chance to speak since you won your fourth term last November.
Mm-hmm.
What was the next day like after the election's over? All that's behind you. You're heading into a fourth term. What's it been like?
The next day was back to work, to be honest with you, Scott. I mean, you know, we didn't miss a beat. It's not like you take time off or anything like that. You roll up your sleeves. You keep on working for the people of Marion. That's what it's all about. You know, and we're doing the same thing this year in 2020 as well. You know, it's tradition in Marion for the mayor to give their state of the city address to city council first. We always do that in the last Monday of the month of January, which I did deliver the state of the city to them then. And then usually I go out on the road, so to speak, Kiwanis, Rotary, the different media outlets, and talk about some of the highlights of the state of the city. It's very similar to maybe what we're most familiar with, the State of the Union that the president gives. The president gave the State of the Union, I think, what, 2 weeks ago now, maybe three, I forget. The governor always gives the state of the state address, so it's not unusual for the mayor of Marion to give the state of the union, or the state of the city, I'm sorry. But what I can't find out is how long has that tradition been going on? I can't find anywhere in our codified ordinances where it says that I'm legally obligated under city law to do that. So I believe it's more of just a tradition to give the state of the city. So maybe if some of your listeners out there know any more history on the state of the city and who the first mayor was that gave the state of the city, was it in the 20s, the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, and you know, who knows when it was. I know Jack Kellogg gave it. I can only presume that Mayor Brown and Mayor Malone and Mayor Dune and Mayor Yazel gave it. That takes us back to about 1966 with Mayor Yazel. I think he was elected in 65 and took office in 66. So that would be my lifetime right there. 1966 is when I was born. So it's just interesting to know those little fun facts about your local community. And of course, you know, I'm sure you've talked about it. It's the 200th anniversary of Marion County. It's the bicentennial.
It's the bicentennial and the 100th anniversary of President Harding being elected. It's a big year.
Now, Scott, I'm going to put you on the spot.
Hit me with it.
Because usually you're the ones that put your guests on the spot sometimes. Were you born for the country's bicentennial?
No, just a little after.
Oh, you
I missed it.
Okay. I knew it was close in there. I wasn't sure. I don't want to say your age, but yeah, I remember the 1976 country United States bicentennial, and I think I was, what, 10 years old then. So it was kind of a momentous occasion. There were lots of things going on in the country, and like Marion's bicentennial, Randy Wendland and his team from the Marion County Historical Society and volunteers from numerous communities around Marion County and organizations have planned a whole bunch of things going on. And Randy came and spoke to our staff meeting. We do staff meeting twice a month. I think it's the first and the third Wednesday of every month we do a staff meeting. And he came to our last one and spoke. And kind of we talked about, well, what's the city going to do? Because the city's bicentennial is not until 2022. So this is the year that we celebrate the counties, but people tend to forget that the city is part of the county. We often make the separation or the distinction as somehow that they're two separate identities, but we're really one and the same, and that's the kind of partnership that in my tenure as mayor that I've tried to facilitate and develop and grow with the county and other political subdivisions. But again, I'm getting a little off track because one of the things that came out of that meeting with Randy Wendland is we are trying to find the oldest living city employee. Mm. And I don't know who that is. I don't know how we would search back in our records because a lot of those records are probably in some box in the basement, and they're probably not organized very well. But Randy was talking about one of the programs for the bicentennial is they're going to do recorded history, living, you know, people that are living today talking about an historical event or what it was like to work at Whirlpool when it first opened up, what it was like to work in the Marion City Schools, you know, taking a look at some of the institutions that unfortunately we've all come to take for granted here in the Marion community. But we're looking or on the lookout for the oldest living Marion City employee. And if you happen to know somebody, or you think that you know somebody, we're asking folks to call the mayor's office. We'll do our best to verify and confirm that that individual is the oldest city living employee, and we'll somehow get him in touch. We will get him in touch with Randy Winland and see if we can get their recorded history of what it was like to work for the city of Marion in, I don't know, the 1950s, the 1960s. You know, those are times that are 50 years plus now that we have forgotten what it was like to work for the city of Marion. You know, City Hall wasn't even here at that point in time when that employee likely worked for the city. It was on Delaware Avenue. So things were very different back then. So that's one of the things that we're doing to participate in the county's bicentennial, and then we'll see what the city does to celebrate its bicentennial in a couple of years. But, you know, it's not just the bicentennial. There are so many other things going on in Marion this year. I think there are lots of anniversaries being celebrated. I think Marion General Hospital has an anniversary. Of course, you've got the grand opening, ribbon cutting of the Harding Library and Museum. I understand that date's been pushed off a little bit. And listen, I understand how construction projects go. They don't always go as planned. Your materials don't get delivered. Things don't happen. Permits don't get signed and sealed and delivered on time. So I know Sherry and her staff and her team at the History Connection are eager and excited to get that museum open. And it'll be a grand day in Marion as we celebrate. Of course, it's the 100th anniversary for women's right to vote in a presidential election. I believe it was 1919, which was the 19th Amendment,
right,
that gave women the right to vote. But this is the first presidential campaign where they voted, and that basically carried Harding into the White House. But, you know, that front porch campaign was pretty historic as well. So I wonder if any of the presidential candidates will stop in Marion and do a front porch campaign event here. That would be quite something to see, since it's the 100th anniversary. There's still a lot in the field on one side of the political aisle, and I think the other side of the political aisle has it narrowed down to just the president, which is not uncommon for that to happen. But again, just a lot of exciting things going on in our community this year in 2020, and I hope everybody has an opportunity to get out and celebrate them. The city is participating as much as it can to be a part of all these events that are going on. Then, of course, there's everything that's going on City Council. You may be familiar with the state suing the pharmaceutical companies over the opioid epidemic. I had the pleasure, luxury, privilege, whatever the case may be, Friday at the Ohio Municipal League board meeting, which I am a past president and board member of the Ohio Municipal League, where the lead attorney for the state came in and talked to us about this lawsuit and asked the local governments. There are over 2,000 local governments in the state of Ohio. Now, that includes all 88 counties, but of course, in those counties, you've got villages, you've got townships, and you've got cities. So the lead attorney asked us to take a resolution back to our legislative bodies, in the case of the city of Marion, and pass a resolution supporting what their efforts are to hold the pharmaceutical companies accountable for the opioid epidemic that has inflicted not only the country, the state, but right here in our own backyard, right here at home, we see it very prevalent as well. So the council, with little information and little time for discussion, actually took action on that resolution last night. So I'd like to publicly thank all the members of City Council for taking action to support this. It's One Ohio. You may remember that there were individual cities a couple of years ago that filed lawsuits against the pharmaceutical companies. The state kind of came in and said, you know what, we'd have more power if we combined everything in one, and then the state's attorneys are handling the lawsuit. And that is proceeding right now. And there is a possibility that there could be a settlement. And the money that comes out of that settlement, this resolution last night, the governor has laid out how he would like to distribute and spend the money. We learned a lesson in the state of Ohio, again, a few years back with the tobacco settlement, which was not used really in its intended purpose. So the governor has laid out a plan with the attorney general of the state of Ohio. If they settle or when they win the lawsuit later on this year, whichever comes first, to create a situation where local governments have an opportunity to reap the benefits of this settlement, whatever the dollar amount is. And that's the key right there. We don't know how much we're talking, but we're talking in the hundreds of millions of dollars, maybe even a billion or more. So whatever the settlement is, 30% of that would be distributed to the political subdivisions that I spoke of, which would include the city of Marion. And then 15% would go directly to the state, and then the other 55% would go into a foundation. There would be a board appointed to this statewide foundation to manage the 55% of whatever the dollar amount is of the settlement. And then they broke the state down into 19 districts, and that money will be distributed to those 19 districts, and those districts would also have a board to determine how they would spend their share of the 55% of the settlement money. And that is where they would assist organizations like Children's Services. A lot of folks don't know that Children's Services has been severely impacted by the opioid crisis. Adam H. Boards, which often are the front group of folks that deal with the rehab and the sober living environments, and what do we do there? And so that money, that 55%, would go towards things like that. Now, the city of Marion, all the political subdivisions in the state of Ohio, there's couple PhDs somewhere that came up with some formula based on some metrics that shows how much Cleveland gets and how much Marion gets and how much Grand Prairie Township gets. And so it looks like we would get, it's, let's just say it's $1 billion. The city of Marion would get somewhere in the neighborhood of $2.5 million plus. Again, it all depends on what the dollar amount is from the settlement. And then what would the city of Marion do with that? Well, I'm on record as saying that we should use that in our frontline first responders, because other than family members, they're the first ones to respond to these types of crises that take place, whether it's any type of an addiction. It could be an addiction problem that spawns a domestic issue. So we can do things like buy the right equipment that our police and fire need, pay overtime, help with Marmet costs. There are a number of things that we can do and help with that situation. Now, I also said in the paper a week ago that I do believe that there is no amount of money in this world that can squelch the pain of the loss of a family for somebody who has lost someone due to the opioid addiction or any addiction for that problem. But these are the facts that we have to live with right now. And we will use this money to fight the problem in our community with all the efforts that the council has taken last night and the state attorneys will take in either settling the lawsuit before it goes to trial. It's set to go to trial, I think they said, either late October, early November. I believe the jury has been selected, so the pharmaceutical companies have come to the table knowing that this lawsuit is going to go forward, and maybe both sides hope that it'll be settled before then.
There are a couple things locally in our time this morning that I wanted to cover, and mainly because of the change in local media. We still have the newspaper, which is great, but as I've always said, a newspaper will print what they think is important that you said, and radio is a little different, especially live radio. It's what you say, and it's the answer to it. A big question in the last few months has been with the health department. And if I have any of this wrong, let me know, because we want to know exactly what's going on there. There was a contract for the city to help fund the health department along with the county. And then at one point, you did not want to continue on with that contract in December last year. And a letter was sent out, and there was a little discord at the health department that they didn't like that. And then they got an attorney and said, you can't do this. A letter was sent to you, and a letter, you rescinded the letter. Is that where we are now?
No, you got about maybe half of it right.
Straightened out.
So to your point about the media here locally, you know, we like to think we have a hometown newspaper, but do we really? Because the people that make the decisions are not from Marion, Ohio, okay? The reporters, they do the best job that they can, but it's not the same Marion Star that many of your listeners grew up with. It's not the same, let's use radio, since we're on that form of medium right now. It's not the same radio in Marion, Ohio that we all grew up with. I grew up at a point in time listening to radio to find out if there was going to be a school delay or a school cancellation. You don't do that anymore, unfortunately. I listened to the local radio to find out what happened on the high school football game or basketball game the weekend before. You don't get quite that hometown feel from your local media anymore. And that is unfortunate. And I'm sure some of your listeners are out there right now shaking their heads, hopefully agreeing with me, because the face of media, it's gone more national, if you will. And there is more national news and more national stories in our local media than I have ever seen before. So it's stations like yours that's be able to roll up their sleeves and get into the local issues. You know, you're a local guy. I know you have outside the county and outside the city guests on your show, and that's obviously okay. But I think for the most part, anybody that's on your show as a personality is pretty much local, or come to be known as local.
Right. But you know, the question I have in that health department spiel there, is that the story that has been put out because of what you just said?
Well, I think so.
Because that's where the confusion is.
What happened is this is not the first contract that we've had with Marion Public Health, and the county does not have a contract with Marion Public Health. The county, to the best of my knowledge, the county government does not fund Marion Public Health. There is an organization called the DAC, their District Advisory Council. It's made up of a representative from every political subdivision in the county. And here we go back to those political subdivisions. What are they? They're the townships. They're the villages. Yes, the county does have a representative on the DAC, and yes, so does the city ever since we merged. And so the DAC is the one that makes a lot of the they appoint three members of the board, and the city appoints three members of the board with the consent of city council. And then there's that seventh member that rotates every 3 years. So 3 years the DAC appoints, 3 years the city appoints, just to keep that fair and balanced throughout the life of the health department. Look, I was an advocate of merging the health departments from the very beginning. And anybody that has said that I was trying to take over the health department was doing nothing more than trying to sell ad space on whatever medium that they were pushing at that particular time. I was for it at the time it went to the vote, and I'm for it now. However, I do have a responsibility. It's called checks and balances. And because the city pays Marion Public Health a substantial amount of money to operate, I do have that responsibility to question how that money is spent. Apparently, though, I'm the only one that wants to question that. So when you're standing in the woods asking a question that nobody wants an answer, you kind of feel pretty lonely out there. The current contract that we're under specifically says that the contract should be reviewed every 5 years. December was the end of the 5 years, and nobody wanted to follow the contract. We still haven't adequately, appropriately reviewed the contract. We do have the ability to change the contract, and I'm suggesting that the health department isn't doing everything that they should be doing. And if they're not, then why are we still paying full freight? I never intended not to pay them anything. I'm just saying we shouldn't be paying you the same amount if you're not doing what I believe and the city believes that you're supposed to be doing.
What aren't they doing?
They're not doing things like code enforcement. That's why we have Casey Thomas on the job now. That's why I've had to build an environmental codes division within the city of Marion. They're not doing weed and grass anymore. That's why we have to do weed and grass ourselves. So over the 10 years that Marion Public Health has been created, there are things that they have said that they just don't think is a health issue. But as a city, we think that they're very important that we continue to do them. That's why we now do the weed and grass program within the city government. And then the Marion Public Health used to do that. The old city health department used to do that. Also, when it comes to abandoned housing and all the issues that pile up when it comes to something like that. Look, the bottom line is this. Unfortunately, at my level of government, I treat the symptoms. And anybody out there listening knows that that is not the best way to treat the disease. The disease is the lack of foreclosures in this county. We've got over $8 million in uncollected property taxes. Think about if we collected all those property taxes, how many school levies would not have to go up every other year, it seems like. We've got five school districts. They all have levies on. Somebody's going up for a levy all the time. And those property taxes, the most of the money goes to the schools, MRDD, Children's Services. MRDD's up again this year. Think how much money that they would have in their coffers if we collected the $8+ million in back taxes owed in this county. So those are some of the issues. Those are some of the symptoms. And then I have to deal with that abandoned house that is hundreds, thousands, or tens of thousands behind in property taxes. The city of Marion does not collect property taxes. So that house falls into disrepair. It becomes a dumping ground for abandoned tires, junk cars, trash and refuse, weeds and grass, squatters, windows get broken out. The houses get stripped of anything of value. Some of these older homes in our neighborhoods still have copper piping in them. Do you think an abandoned house has copper piping in it anymore? No, it does not. They've been stripped out and they've been sold to a local salvage yard. Now, those are some of the things that we deal with, and those are some of the things that the health department used to deal with on a more aggressive, proactive basis that, in my opinion, they are not, because it's not getting any better. What is getting better is when the city or the county, in this case, through the land bank, receives a grant, and then we actually remove that blighted house completely, wipe the slate clean off that parcel where that house sits.
So where at this point do we stand with the whole situation that was with the health department, that you wanted to look at the contract again, which you were allowed to do according to the contract back in December? They hired a lawyer. Where is it now?
Well, first of all, they hired a high-priced attorney out of Columbus. I can't imagine what the taxpayers had to spend to pay that attorney. I used the city law director. You know, that was their choice. I think that was a bad decision. That was a bad use of taxpayer monies. So, you know, right now the dialogue is open. I have great respect for the employees of the health department. And understand that just because you disagree with someone doesn't mean that you don't like them. I think in today's world, we see national political figures on TV that disagree with one another, and it's made out like, oh, they hate each other. Absolutely not the case here. We live beside one another. We live close to one another. We see each other in this community all the time. So whether it's the president of the DAC, Butch Winslow, that I have a lot of respect for, just sometimes disagree with him, or Tracy Kensler, who I respect but happen to just disagree with. As long as they are doing what they're supposed to do, then there will be no need to call back any of the money. But if they're not going to do it, like the weed and grass program or the spraying of the mosquito program that we once had that the city now operates, we need to bring back some of that money so we can do it internally. And that's what the environmental code enforcement program is all about. We can talk for another hour about the success that Casey Thomas has had, a Marion City police officer dedicated to enforcing these codes. Now, he is a city police officer, so in an emergency or a call for assistance by another police officer, he knows when to peel off what he's doing and go help out when he has to. But when a police officer rolls up in a squad car because you've got abandoned tires, trash and refuse, or junk cars, you're probably going to pay more attention. So we're trying to build a collaboration between the two organizations. Look, we meet with Marion Public Health on a monthly basis. We actually are going to meet in the mayor's conference room this Thursday. And that's not unusual. We always meet with Marion Public Health. So just because we disagree doesn't mean we don't talk, doesn't mean we don't meet, and it doesn't mean that we, you know, don't like each other.
And on that note, with our 10 minutes left here, there are two other subjects I want to cover for the exact reason we covered that particular subject, because maybe what was reported was not exactly how it was. The other issue, or one of the other two issues, and we'll try to spend 5 minutes on each here and hit them really quick. Last November, we also had the election of a new auditor, Robert Landon, in the November election. He took office. And you were accused by some people and local media of trying to create a position, a budget director position. The inference was made, we all saw it, that you were trying to circumnavigate him. And then there was a meeting between you and him. He was saying things in social media. People can go and look that up if they like. Where does that relationship stand now, and what was that all about?
Well, let's not forget that I also won, okay?
You did, absolutely.
I also won, too. Okay?
Well,
what we heard during that period is elections have consequences. And yes, my victory also has consequences as well. I don't really look at them as a consequence, though. That kind of gives a negative connotation. Look, you know, I have a little bit more experience in municipal government, what I was trying to do was to ensure, because of changes in personnel in my administration, that we had a firm grasp on the budgeting process in Marion Municipal Government. Nothing more than that. Yes, it was blown out of proportion, but you know, some people think that that's how you sell ad space or on your airtime or on a newspaper. And that's fine. I understand how it works. I've been in this business a long time. Not always an elected official, but I've been in public policy and campaign politics for quite some time now, so I understand. So I take it all in stride. It's not personal. And when you start taking it personal, maybe you shouldn't be in the business of doing what it is that we do, because we're here to serve your listeners that happen to live in the city and all the other folks that aren't listening that live in the city. So those were my intentions to create the position. It's not an uncommon position. My goodness, they have one at the state government, the federal government, and many cities have a similar type person that assists the administration with the budgeting process. That's not something under Ohio Revised Code that the auditor is responsible for. But, you know, what I did is I reached across the aisle. I reached out. Our office doors are less than 10 feet away from each other. It didn't make much sense to not be talking to one another. So I invited he and his senior staff to meet with my senior staff. And we had we've had two meetings so far. in January and February. And out of those two meetings, we realized that we're all working for the same goal. We're not out to say gotcha to one or the other. And I realized that that often happens in politics, gotcha politics. You know, election night, I was on the air, I believe. You had Glenn Coble at the Democratic, victory and defeat in some cases. But I stood up and I said, you know what? The election is over. The voters have spoken. It's time to roll up our sleeves and get to work for the voters that have chosen us to go into office and do the job. I meant it then and I mean it now. And so what came out of those first two meetings is that Robert and I will continue to meet on a monthly basis just to talk over the issues. We talked about some bonds and notes that the city had in our last meeting, and I suggested that we should probably get bond counsel, who is an attorney that specializes in the legal advice on bond counsel, to get up here and talk to us about where we are. We lost a lot of institutional knowledge when we lost a 12-year treasurer or city auditor, and you have the new auditor, Landon, who does not have the institutional knowledge. So I'm trying to lay the groundwork to make sure that we work together and that we work in a positive fashion to make sure that we work for the voters and the taxpayers of the city of Marion.
I just read this article from the Star last night that was in probably about a month ago, and I'd never seen local media do it this way, so I thought it'd be a good question for you to clear up, because an inference again was made in that whole spiel with the auditor's office and the changing of the guard in the auditor's office that you were creating positions, budget director, sanitarian, which had not been there for a couple years, to fill positions for people who were no longer going to be in the auditor's office because of the changing of the guard.
So I guess people from the former auditor's office who have all the qualifications to do the jobs that I have asked them to do. The sanitarian position, that was the only job description. We have what we call a Yarger report. That was the only job description that I could have used in that case. That person was a former sanitarian for the Marion City Health Department. So the qualifications are there. Now the service director has a lot of institutional knowledge when it comes to the legislative side of city government, because she was the clerk of city council and the deputy auditor. She understands the finances of the city. And those are the kinds of skills that we needed in those particular positions. You go to the sanitarian, we just talked about the health department. The sanitarian is actually doing a lot of the work that I believe the health department should be doing. If the health department was doing that work, we wouldn't have a necessity to have an environmental codes division, a Casey Thomas, a weed and grass program, a sanitarian's position to do those kinds of things. But all those positions, again, sit at the same meeting with Marion Public Health in 2 days. So I don't buy that at all. The inference can be made on just about anything. What the local media should have done is asking me a direct and pointed question, just as you and I are discussing with your listeners right here and right now. The President of the United States is going through a uniquely similar situation in his administration. The best time to do something like that is right after you have won an election, because that's when people decide they're going to retire. I had my 12-year safety director, Tom Robbins, decide that he was going to retire. So I had to plan to fill the positions. Thankfully, I had an experienced service director who was an interim police chief, who was a major, a lieutenant, a sergeant, and a patrolman in the Marion City Police Department, who fit right into the vacancy created by Tom Robbins in the safety director's position. Thus, it opened up a service director, and I had a well-qualified individual to slot into there. But we tested the waters on the Office of Budget and Management. The public, apparently, at least the public that came to city council and the local media, didn't like it. See, I don't think it's the local media's job to dictate public policy. It's your job to report the public policy. But such as it is, I now have a qualified safety director, service director, public works director, and a public or a sanitarian in the environmental codes division who has that experience to do the job.
Final question, just because I'm sure at some point it will be a story. Right now, the current auditor was accused of some things right before the last election, and now we know a special prosecutor has been hired to prosecute that case. We think that case is going to go on. Who knows what will happen between now and then, but I know you can't comment on the validity of the case, but as far as the money that will be spent on this and how it looks for the city of Marion, you being the head of the city of Marion, what do you make of that? That's kind of unprecedented in the city as far as I know.
Well, you know, the question was asked in a city council meeting, has this ever been done before? I think it has. It's not something that I tracked as a city councilman. It's not something I remember happening in my tenure as a mayor. I do believe it is probably the best thing to do. The judge has recused herself. The judge is having a visiting judge come in that will be paid for with taxpayer dollars out of the court's fund that does things like that. So it's not an unusual circumstance. I think that it should be adjudicated in the court of law, and that is the place for it to be, and we will let it play out in the courts and let them decide. That's what they do. That's what that branch of government is all about.
Mayor Scott Schertzer, I can't thank you enough for coming in. It's always a pleasure, and hopefully we can do it anytime anything arises, and anytime you want to straighten anything out, just let us know, and we will do that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Stay tuned to WWGH Radio. More programming around the corner.
Coming soon, Weasel Boy, the sequel on WWGH 107.1 FM.
Meadows Lawn Care and Landscaping is a proud WGH Radio 107.1 FM, Marion, Ohio. Telephone number 740-262